The tour guide. I followed the German tour guide through the hulking old basilica. He told the group, or so I guessed, indicating high and low. This is where the wind begins. This is where the childhoods of 1,000 martyrs live untouched. Wood grain in these pews still curls to likenesses of patron saints. Window holes are cut the breadth of human souls when loosed. Dark paint in the frescoes is crushed ants. White paint is light. Leaves and fauna long extinct are rendered in the porticos. See that goat with antlers? Gone from life, but captured here. Hold your breath and it bows its head. Reach toward the ceiling and sigh and it sighs. Worth two times the value of the Bulgar Sea is that old bell. When younger priests would ring it, the nuns were warned to shield their hearts. He said far more I can't recall, and when I tried to pay him, he spurned my coins, saying in German, "What good is money, my child, to the wind?"
Welcome to Poets Cafe. This is host Lois P. Jones, and today's guest is Mandy Kahn. Mandy is the author of Math, Heaven, Time, and co-author of the nonfiction book Collage Culture, examining the 21st century's identity crisis. In January of 2016, former poet laureate Ted Kooser featured a poem from the collection At the Dorm in his syndicated newspaper column, American Life in Poetry. Kahn collaborates with composers to create works that feature poetry in tandem with classical music and has had readings in Paris, Berlin, London, Davies Symphony Hall in San Francisco, New York, and Arts Center College of Design in Pasadena. She was one of several librettists who wrote the text for the opera Hopscotch. By the way, that libretto for the project was also quoted in The New Yorker. Welcome, Mandy.
Thank you so much for having me.
I've read this poem so many times. There's something about this poem, I mean, with much of your works, but in particular this one, I always ask myself, did it happen that way? Did any of it happen that way? But it's that mystery that's so believable, so beautiful. I love the way I can lose myself in it. And I don't know, I kind of don't want to know, really. Like, if there's italicized parts in here, but it could be something you read, it could not be, it could be something you shaped. But I just love this piece. I want to mention something from a Huffington Post article you penned entitled 13 Thoughts on Poetry in the Digital Age. Great, great article for our listeners out there. You said, "You're powerful. Your connection to others is more evident than ever before. You can choose to be a reflection of whatever is put before you, or you can choose with incredible precision what you put before yourself and build yourself carefully. You can be a conglomerate of the popular ideas of your time, or you can step out of the flow of your time and return to it with a vision of your own." So that is a big intro, but it got me to thinking, how does one build themselves?
I started out, actually, when I was an undergraduate, my university had this really fascinating pilot program where as an undergrad you could pitch a class, and if a professor sponsored you, you could teach that class. And so I taught along with a couple of other students. I inherited a class and taught it for a year called Body Images that was about how what we see all the time in the media and just in the world around us, we come to incorporate into our psychology and mirror back. And we can find ourselves saying things that we have picked up in the world around us. And through the process of inheriting that class and teaching that class, I started a lifelong fascination with the idea of where we get our ideas and who we are inherently based on how much we are amalgamation of the thoughts and influences around us. And I have come to understand that for myself, I feel most myself when I create a space at home where I am really carefully choosing the books that I want to read, the authors that I want to enter into a relationship with, the things that I want to watch, movies or TV or news or no news. And I choose really carefully based on the spirit at the center of the thing, which I feel my way into. So I'm a very sensitive person, mm-hmm. and it's a very sensitive process. I can read a paragraph from something and just get a sense of the spirit behind it. And I'm a naturally optimistic person, and I find that I am a best fit and a most natural fit for works, whether they're television or film works, whether they're written works, that have a natural optimism or sort of a loving center to them. Doesn't mean that it always has to be happy or bright, but the interest in other people comes from a sense of genuine wonder and genuine desire for connection and desire for understanding. It can still be works with a lot of pathos, with difficult parts, but there is that desire to connect and see the connection between all of us in the works that most resonate with me. And I find that the more I'm able to choose things that really feel like a fit for me, the more I can really hear my own voice. So I've become quite careful with the things that I bring in.
That's beautifully said.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think it really that is the operative word, choice, because we're so inundated constantly. I think that's very useful for any creative person. It doesn't mean that we can't be connected with current events, but we can choose how we want to be exposed to them and in what ways and what we want to focus our attention on.
I find that for me, biography and personal stories are a very effective way for me to come to know history, mm-hmm. and to come to know it through the doorway of empathy and through the doorway of desire for understanding. And that works better for me than something that feels very chosen and manipulated and fact-heavy, or what feels to me like through the doorway of the mind.
Sure.
So human life to human life is my preferred way of encountering history, and I find that it stays with me, it resonates with me, and then on the other side of it, I am able to be empathetic in a way that's specific to a life, specific to a journey, specific to a time, by way of one person's experience there. And that's the kind of history that stays with me, whereas I don't retain dates very well. Mm-hmm. I don't memorize in that way, but I memorize by way of understanding.
Mm-hmm. And I think that definitely permeates your work and your poetry. There's an authenticity to your work. Nobody likes to read anything that feels contrived, and poets are particularly sensitive to that, I think. Good poets are. They know when something is honest and true, and that's what I love in particular about your work, that sense of honesty. And it deals a lot also with relationships, too, and a very direct voice that comes from that. Today's guest is Mandy Kahn, and we're here talking about her beautiful book, Math, Heaven, Time, and her influences, and what helps to shape her way of creating. I wanted to speak to your next poem, if we could. So, go ahead.
So this poem is a marriage proposal. Part one is the offer, and part two is the response. Marry me. One. He said, I've known women taught from childhood all the ways to love a man further than reason. So he grabs his head in passion, scared he'll spill his brains. Touched bodies stitched of plum skins, held bodies shivered thin with fear and sickness all through sweaty nights, so near death they stink. You were not yet born when I learned for good what a girl could do, and gently, with flattened hands, looking me straight in the eye. I'm not here for friendship. I don't want a lover. Take me to your small house and hang me like a shelf beside your entryway. Water me and feed me as you see fit. Give me a place to do my work and I'll show you the finest work of my life. Wrap your legs around me when the day ends and snore. There, where trash trucks shake the wooden shades with loud harmonica calls, with your long hands to shuffle my hair and finger my toes, I'll show the world what I can do. 2. She said, I'm a white Siberian iris, just past seedling in a vacant lot. Nobody knows how I got here, how to tend me, how long I'll last. I'm vulnerable to winds, dropped temperatures, interruptions, men. To love me is to watch me from the window of the tenement across the way, to visit me on Sundays, to send your prayers. Some things are so strange to the world and to themselves, they're best left to the seasons, which will care for them in increments so small they shuffle nothing, impact nothing, as far as men can see.
Beautiful. Don't you love reading this poem? I don't know. It's such a great poem. It's like, wow, you know? It's an envious poem. It's a classic, and it's so original. That's, I think, a real challenge in the poet's world, how to take from the classics, how to take from these different influences, and yet maybe there's a touch of Frost in there, maybe there's a Whitman, but it's you, you know, it's you.
Thank you. Well, in the years of sort of development, I thought of the process as two-pronged, and so one prong was the practicing of the technical side of my craft. I love being able to work in forms like in sonnet. I love being able to weave in classic devices like repeated sounds, and almost everything I write is in standard meter. So I loved the years of practicing craft, but that felt very much like practice to me. It felt like running drills, like when you're learning how to play the piano. And then on the other side, the other prong was learning to really come to understand who I am and what I feel like I'm here to do and what my voice is. And that was really following what I was drawn to and just going deeper and deeper into the things that really interested me. I do a lot of research, especially the new collection that I've worked on. There's a lot of research that for me is through the door of biography, as I mentioned, through the door of other lives. And by following my interest in other people, I came to understand a lot about what I was looking for in terms of understanding and connection, a lot about the quality of what I was looking to understand about other people. That helped me to understand a lot about myself. And I feel like ultimately a voice came and quietly stepped forward. And only when I felt like the voice I was speaking with felt very much like mine did I begin to weave in the technical aspects I'd worked on and weave it in with the voice. And what came through was sort of a braid of those two things.
That's an interesting aspect, because I think a lot of poets go a long ways before they feel that they're writing their own voice, before they even go, is this me? Where it feels comfortable, where you can just write and you're not thinking about all of those other things. So that's really an accomplishment. And I know you kind of eschewed academia to some extent. I mean, you went so far and then you, was it 8 months away? You kind of walked away from the whole thing.
8 weeks away.
8 weeks, okay.
I did drop out.
Wow, 8 weeks. Okay,
eight
wow.
Eight weeks away. I did drop out of graduate school, and I'm very glad that I did. It was the first strong step I think I took towards turning off what I was hearing and saying, there must be a way to do things that feels like a match for the person that I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a very sensitive person, and so certain environments, I just can't live there. I think that's why I identify closely with plants, which is funny to say out loud.
No, I understand that.
Uh-huh. But like plants, I feel sensitive to the elements.
Sure.
And I realized that I had to find an environment that was like sunlight.
Mm, beautiful.
Thank you. And when I found that environment, I would be able to, you know, widen and really become myself. But that wouldn't happen for me in an environment that didn't have the same sorts of elements that a plant needs.
Mm-hmm.
Soil that's full of nutrients and air that's full of warmth and an environment that feels like it's ready to help you grow.
And then, you know, in keeping with this metaphor, who knows what that flower is going to be? You can plant these things. You can say, okay, well, here's a nice set of rose bushes, and they look similar and they smell great. But then by demanding that you move toward your own voice, then this flower opens and you're like, wow, that's an exotic orchid, you know. It's like, wow. And I know, you know, people feel that way when they hear your work. And you also have this wonderful ability to connect with other mediums as well, as introduced in your bio, you know, your collaborations. And you do work also with art and some ekphrastic work. Let's read your next one that has to do with O'Keeffe and Steiglitz. Oh, it's a beauty.
Thank you. The speaker in this poem is the photographer Alfred Stieglitz, and he's speaking to his romantic partner of many years, the painter George O'Keeffe. Stieglitz took many photographs of O'Keeffe's hands over their long partnership, and this poem uses those photos of O'Keeffe's hands as its jumping-off point. Your hands, Stieglitz to O'Keeffe. It's not only they're a pair of starfish wet on crumbled rock, or how they're older than you are, or that they stand for you. Fingers sometimes square as cocktail carrots, and others round. Fingers sometimes curved in benediction, woozy with grace, or flat and spread above your head, two antennas calling down through ceiling boards and roof tiles the next line you will paint. Cleft of tendon that lifts in your wrist, lifeline that hints you'll outlive me. Their fluted shape is the leaning shape you always paint, a drying conch. It isn't how they always find the light, or how they're bronze, how they echo the ditch that forms by your clavicle, or how they possess, how they sneak from the fields of your sleeves like ferrets with a curious nose, how their maps of the roads through the hills by Lake George, or how they are rakes, or how each claws his mate, saying, my love, my foe. No, it's how, holding the tree in even sunlight, they are the tree.
That's beautiful, beautiful. O'Keeffe said when she was in New York, she said, one can't paint New York as it is, but rather as it is felt.
That really resonates,
right?
With me. Really resonates with me. And I love her New York paintings.
Yeah.
It is a felt impression of New York.
And your poem is a felt impression of the photograph. Or photographs, you know, he did a series, I don't know how many he took of her, but oh my God, you really feel that. Even if you can't see the photographs, which people should look at because they're absolutely stunning, and you captured so well that those starfish fingers, that's what a poet does. They name these things, and suddenly they become alive in you, that image, not only the starfish, but the aliveness of the starfish, the aspects of a starfish that have this life in itself, with a sort of way it touches things.
Thank you. I've had a copy of that book, which is a book of photos that Stieglitz took of O'Keeffe, on my shelf. Actually, it was a book that I couldn't afford as a student, because when I was an undergrad, it was out of print. But they had a copy of it at my university library, and I came upon it one day in the stacks, and I would visit it from my spot that I like to study at in the library. I would take breaks and go to this book and flip through, and that was living, moving biography for me, because I was very in love with O'Keeffe's work, also in love with Stieglitz's work, and to be able to gaze through his eyes at her. The photos begin right when they've met, really, almost the first conversations that Stieglitz and O'Keeffe have when they meet each other in New York. He says, can I photograph you? And so the beginning photos are really Stieglitz coming to look on O'Keeffe for almost the first time, and then over the years of their partnership, and then his fascination with her hands, and by way of her hands, her work, by way of her work, her personage, and by way of her personage, her life and her presence in the room. You can see it all through his eyes, through this work. This is why I've always been drawn to photography, also why I've always been drawn to biography, to reading people's letters, because you can come to understand how they see the world, and also, in the case of letters, often how they feel in the middle of their lives. It's very interesting to be a person with all the challenges that come with being in the beginning or middle of one's life, and get to look at another life that is not only finished, but also finished years in the past, and to come to understand the way that a life weaves together into a narrative that often people can see right at the end of their own lives what the narrative was. So it brings a lot of comfort for me to be able to see how people felt about their own lives in the middle.
The exposure of the intimacy of conversation that you wouldn't necessarily get on film or in some other medium, you know, and that allows that inner life to be inside you as well. We're getting a little bit closer toward, I can't believe, toward the end, and I want to absolutely get to some other things too. If you're just tuned in, we're at Poets Cafe with the wonderful Mandy Kahn, speaking of all things poetry and art, and reading from Math, Heaven, Time, her book out on iWork Publishing, and also from her new manuscript, which is coming forward, and that is entitled...
Well, right now it's called Glenn Gould's Chair.
Right, right. And there's a great poem that goes with that. Let's move into the music, because that's a huge, huge part of who you are. You're building, you're shaping yourself with everything you see. So there's a sense of the way you build yourself with music as well, through repetition, listening over and over to pieces. How about your next piece that we're going to talk about, Six Marimbas?
In this collection of poems about classical music, I had the great joy of speaking from a lot of different perspectives. Sometimes I spoke from the voice of a composer, sometimes from a piece of music, lots of other perspectives as well. This is a piece where the speaker is a whole work of music sort of speaking in one voice. It's called Six Marimbas, Steve Reich. The Steve Reich piece, Six Marimbas, is played by six players in close formation on six instruments. A marimba looks like a giant xylophone, and these players need to each play a different rhythm and yet be aware of what the other players are doing. And yet, it's a different time signature, essentially, for each player. So it's very challenging.
And by the way, this is the piece that our listeners will hear in the beginning and end of the show.
Oh, wonderful. Six Marimbas, Steve Reich. Certain even numbers split in two become a set of primes. Technically, they're even, but they're pregnant with indivisibility. I have always been like that. I'm linear, but cockeyed. All those lines lined up, but at a slant. You see it when you watch ensembles play me. aren't they brothers standing at my six separate instruments? Don't they listen deftly to each other with such feeling, and with such feeling block each other out? To get to the end, they must fuse, but separately. It is like the question, must you marry yourself to marry another? Or can a thing that isn't already be made whole?
Brilliant. What a brilliant poem. Listeners, if you get a chance on YouTube, this piece, Six Marimbas, it's phenomenal to watch. And what you've brought out of that piece in the poem just implodes in the listener on so many levels. This is host Lois P. Jones, and our guest has been the wonderful Mandy Kahn. Many thanks to our producer, Marlena Bond. Look for us on the Poets Cafe fan page on Facebook. You've been listening to Poets Cafe on Pacifica Radio for all of Southern California and beyond.